Professor Jackie Hodgson from the University of Warwick's Department of Law has started work on an important EU Commission-funded project looking at procedural rights of suspects in police custody. She's working with colleagues in four countries across Europe, and we spoke to her about the impact this project will have on the processes of EU law. So you've just started work on a new project looking at the procedural rights of suspects in police custody in the UK and in Europe. As a starter, is there much difference between the rights a suspect has in the UK and abroad?
Yes, there's quite a wide variety of different rights in different countries. The procedural routes of the countries are different. Some rely more on judicial supervision, some are more adversarial, and the more adversarial countries will tend to have more defence rights in particular. So the four jurisdictions that we're looking at in the research project are England and Wales, Scotland, the Netherlands and France. So England and Wales is probably the best in terms of rights for suspects in police custody, and the project is specifically just looking at the police station part of the criminal process. So, for example, you have a right immediately upon arrest, a right to a private consultation, the lawyer can be present during the interrogation and so on. In France, until recently, the lawyer just had a right to speak to the suspect for 30 minutes in private, and that was it. So it's only been since April of this year that they've been allowed to be present during interrogation. And again, it's only just come in Scotland, and this is all as a result of a case called Saldus in the European Court of Human Rights that's really, really forced the arm of these governments to change the law.
So currently, are there guidelines that stretch over the whole of Europe that should be being followed?
Well, you've got the European Convention of Human Rights, which gives you in very broad brushstrokes things like Article 6, the right to a fair trial. And within then the jurisprudence, the case law of the European Court of Human Rights, that's been specified more clearly exactly what do we mean by a right to a fair trial, what do we mean by a right to a defence. And in the case of Saldus and Turkey, they did actually really, I think, for the first time set out in pretty unequivocal terms that the right to a defence includes the right of access to a lawyer during the suspect's period in police custody, and in particular the right for that lawyer to be present during the interrogation so that the suspect can be assisted during that interrogation. So that's one form of very overarching guidelines. But there's what's called the margin of appreciation, which is everybody has the right to a fair trial, but you're probably going to achieve that in slightly different ways in different jurisdictions. Again, it's going back to these procedural roots of the systems. So if you have a system that's much more focused around the pre-trial investigation with a strong judicial role, the way that you will protect those suspects' rights will differ from, say, somewhere in England and Wales where there's no pre-trial judicial role, so you'd expect the defence lawyer to have a greater role. So what's changing now is that the European Union is getting involved. We've already got a number of measures that are much more around what we would call crime control, much more around the policing and prosecution. So perhaps the best known of that is the European Arrest Warrant, which is essentially fast-track extradition. But there's lots of other stuff around exchange of evidence, asset freezing, that kind of thing. And so now we're at the stage where the very first due process measures, measures that are now specifically to try to provide very clear guidelines about what the standards of defence protection should be right across the European Union. So that's called the roadmap, and they've basically got five measures within that. The first measure, which was fairly uncontroversial, has gone through, which is about the right to interpretation and translation. The second measure is almost there, which is about the right to information in criminal proceedings. So just, you know, the right to know why you're being held in custody and, you know, the right to know that you have a lawyer. And then the third one is the really controversial one, and that's what's going on at the moment, which is the right to custodial legal advice. And ironically, the UK, even though we are furthest ahead on that score, we're one of five countries who have basically set out a note last week to the European Union saying, this is problematic, the draft directive that you have, we think it's actually is going to impede criminal investigations. Having a lawyer at the police station is very important, but not if it's going to actually jeopardise the effectiveness of a criminal investigation. So it's a very dynamic area. So, you know, from month to month, it's really changing a lot.
And are some of the issues coming up because there are different processes from country to country?
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you imagine if you had the misfortune to be arrested here in order to be extradited to Bulgaria, where you're wanted for shoplifting, then what you want to know is that if you're then extradited to Bulgaria, you'll get the same kinds of legal protections that you would here. You'll get the same level of a fair trial, if you like, that you would here and so on. But that clearly, it clearly isn't the case. It isn't the case on paper because of this margin of appreciation and so on. And also it isn't the case in practice. And that's something that this project is trying to provide more empirical data so that we have a better understanding of how things work in practice as well.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how the project's been set up?
Yes, as I say, it's across the four jurisdictions. So there's myself here at Warwick. I have a colleague at the University of West of England and a colleague in Maastricht. Also, Justice, organisation based in London, are also working with us. We have the Open Society Justice Initiative also, and Avon and Somerset Police on the team. And then essentially the first half of the project will be doing empirical research with researchers based in police stations, observing really what goes on a day-to-day basis. How do the police inform people of their rights? How are those rights put into practice? Are there important factors? Are some people more likely to get their rights than others? So might it depend on how serious the offence is or the attitude of the offender? Or is there a particular working culture in that police station? So the idea is we have a real sense of the difference perhaps between what we've got on paper and the legal basis of rights and what's really happening on a day-to-day basis. And then once we have that data, that in itself is a really valuable resource, and certainly as an academic, that's something that I can work with in future work as well. But within the project, what we're then going to do with that is we're going to try to identify best practice. And we have to produce a set of training manuals, essentially for police and lawyers, that would be applicable across the EU for best practice and training for best practice in the provision of those rights for suspects, those rights that the EU is currently addressing and trying to legislate for.
So there's going to be a very clear outcome from the research?
Absolutely. And there'll be a big report as well saying this is what we found. So we'll write up the empirical stuff across the four jurisdictions. And then in terms of impact, I think our project's actually called, it's a European Commission action project. So the idea is that you have a very tangible outcome that has a very tangible benefit for practitioners and will make a positive difference. So it will have an impact. So it's not just something, that would be interesting to find out. We'll find out about that. That will add to academic debate and discourse. Mm-hmm. It also has a much more practical, functional outcome as well. The project will last for 2 years. It started this June. We've just been working at methodology. We've appointed researchers. So we're just about to start training researchers. And I think probably we'll do that at Warwick. And then hopefully they will begin their field work towards the end of November. We're in the process now of identifying sites and negotiating access.
That was actually one thing I was going to ask you. How do you go about getting access?
Well, you have to be very pragmatic, I think. We have John Long, who's the Assistant Chief Constable of Avon and Somerset Police on the team, who, apart from being a fabulous guy and a real asset to the project, as a very senior police officer, will also be extremely useful, obviously, in terms of getting access. So we've already identified some possible sites there. He's already put out feelers, and I don't think that's going to be a problem. And then there are just different ways in. So I've done some work with Justice up in Scotland, up in Edinburgh, looking at the new provisions for custodial legal advice, getting them to think about the challenges, the fact they need to change, that the profession really needs to sort of wake up to what the requirements are there. And so in the course of that, we've made quite good contacts with lawyers and police officers. So it's those kinds of things. France, that's going to be a little bit more tricky, rather more bureaucratic, rather more formal. So probably we'll have to go in via a very senior prosecutor. Prosecutors oversee the period of police detention and interrogation in France. And if we then have their permission, that should then help us go in. But because we're trying to understand it from different perspectives, really, as well as being based in the police station, we'll also have our researchers then, I think, being attached to some lawyers and trying to see it from the defence perspective. And then the real challenge, I think, will be to see if we can speak to suspects as well. But that's, I think, ethically, that's very difficult. And experience shows that suspects may think, no matter what you say to them, they may think that there's going to be some advantage to them in their case if they're cooperating with the research. So we need to think about ways we can do that in a way that doesn't hold out any false hopes for them, and they're really clear and they're not misled. But we just want to try and get a sort of bit more of a 360 degree view of it. So, yes, we're in the process of doing that now.
Is there anything in particular you're expecting to find?
You may have a rough idea, but in every project I've ever done, once you're in the field, you start looking at one set of things. And there are always other things that pop up that you've never thought about that turn out actually to be really key. But having said that, I guess in terms of what we expect to find are, inevitably there will be differences between what the law lays down and how one might expect in a more aspirational way those rights to be put into practice, and then what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis. What we genuinely aren't sure about is, because the changes are so recent in the Netherlands and France and Scotland, we're not quite sure what lawyers are doing, how much they're seizing this new opportunity, what kind of impact they're actually having on the case, and so on. So that's something that, we're genuinely really excited, I think, about finding that out.
Is there any reluctance for this idea of one set of guidelines to be applied across a number of countries?
Yes, a lot of reluctance. So this whole process was first started in, I think it was around 2003, there was then, we had a different sort of institutional structure for the European Union, and it was called a draft framework decision then. And essentially that had all the rights bundled into one measure. And it just, was debated, people tried to amend it, to knock out different bits, and in the end it just fell flat. And it was the right to a lawyer at the police station that really killed that off. So this time around they said, OK, let's separate these out. Let's do this very incrementally. We'll have a roadmap. This is where we're going. These are our five rights. Let's do them one by one. And that's what I was talking about earlier, that we've done one. We're nearly there on the second one. The third one, people are getting a little bit upset about that and think, classically, there are things like in counter-terrorism cases, you wouldn't expect to have exactly the same rights to custodial legal advice. It'll often be delayed, or it may be in the hearing or the sight of an officer. And there's also something in there which, again, I think is probably more appropriate for those more inquisitorially rooted systems, which is about having a lawyer present in investigative acts. So what that really means is, in a country like France, where the trial is often described as a trial by dossier, there are no witnesses, there's no cross-examination, the judge has the file, questions the accused, and then makes a decision. And there's a sense in which much of the work we would do at trial is done at pre-trial in France. So in a case like that, you'd expect the safeguards to be different. So in a system like France, where there's a big emphasis on the pre-trial, you would expect the lawyer to be present in those pre-trial investigative acts, because once it goes in the dossier, essentially it becomes a piece of evidence that's very hard to challenge. In England and Wales, the model is two sides gathering information, and then the trial is where the real decisions are made. So you wouldn't expect the defence lawyer to be present during acts of police investigation. And so there's potentially a small problem there, but not to the extent this recent note that these five jurisdictions have put forward. They're worried about things like, should we have a lawyer present while fingerprints are being taken? Clearly not. Clearly that's not an investigative act in the way that's anticipated. So I think these are actually smaller things that could just be clarified and so on. But the UK, I think it was last week, they voted not to opt in. As there are a couple of countries in Europe that aren't automatically part of criminal justice and home affairs measures. So the European Investigations Order, which is something about sharing evidence very widely within Europe, we have opted into. We have said, the UK has said, well, there are some concerns there, but we want to have a place at the negotiating table and we want to have a vote. So it's important to get in there now. Unfortunately, they haven't adopted the same approach for the right to a lawyer at the police station. They've just said, there are some problems, so we're not going to opt in now, which is a shame, because I think they should be at the negotiating table getting those issues clarified. And I can't imagine there's a single country in the European Union that wouldn't feel the same over things like counter-terrorism measures, because everybody's got exceptions for that.